I was listening to that, complained Arthur, grappling helplessly with the prophet's hammer. So does everybody. That's why this place is like a ghost town. He spat into the dust. No, I mean, that sounded like someone I knew. Princess Hooli? If I had to stand around saying hello to everybody who's known Princess Hooli, I'd need a new set of lungs. Not the princess, said Arthur. The reporter. Her name's Trillian. I don't know where she got the Astra from. She's from the same planet as me. I wondered where she'd got to. Oh, she's all over the continuum these days. We can't get the Tri-D TV stations out here, of course, thank the great green Arcalcesia. But you hear her on the radio gallivanting here and there through space-time. She wants to settle down and finds herself a steady era, that young lady does. It'll all end in tears, probably already has. He swung his hammer and hit his thumb rather hard. He started to speak in tongues. The village of oracles wasn't much better. He had been told that when looking for a good oracle, it was best to find the oracle that other oracles went to, but he was shut. There was a sign by the entrance saying, I just don't know any more. Try next door, but that's just a suggestion, not formal oracular advice. Next door was a cave a few hundred yards away, and Arthur walked towards it. Smoke and steam were rising from, respectively, a small fire and a battered tin pot that was hanging over it. There was also a very nasty smell coming from the pot. At least Arthur thought it was coming from the pot. The distended bladders of some of the local goat-like things were hanging from a propped-up line, drying in the sun, and the smell could have been coming from them. There was also, a worryingly small distance away, a pile of discarded bodies of the local goat-like things, and the smell could have been coming from them. But the smell could just as easily have been coming from the old lady who was busy beating flies away from the pile of bodies. It was a hopeless task, because each of the flies was about the size of a winged bottle top, and all she had was a table tennis bat. Also, she seemed half blind. Every now and then, by chance, her wild thrashing would connect with one of the flies with a richly satisfying thunk, and the fly would hurtle through the air and smack itself open against the rock face a few yards from the entrance to her cave. She gave every impression, by her demeanour, that these were the moments she lived for. Arthur watched this exotic performance for a while from a polite distance, and then at last tried giving a gentle cough to attract her attention. The gentle cough, courteously meant, unfortunately involved first inhaling rather more of the local atmosphere than he had so far been doing, and, as a result, he erupted into a fit of raucous expectoration and collapsed against the rock face, choking and streaming with tears. He struggled for breath, but each new breath made things worse. He vomited, half-choked again, rolled over his own vomit, kept rolling for a few yards, and eventually made it up onto his hands and knees, and crawled panting into slightly fresher air. "Excuse me," he said. He got some breath back. "I really am most dreadfully sorry. I feel a complete idiot," and he gestured helplessly towards the small pile of his own vomit lying spread around the entrance to her cave. "What can I say?" he said. "What can I possibly say?" This, at least, had gained her attention. She looked round at him suspiciously, but, being half-blind, had difficulty finding him in the blurred and rocky landscape. He waved helpfully. "Hello," he called. At last she spotted him, grunted to herself, and turned back to whacking flies. It was horribly apparent from the way that currents of air moved when she did that the major source of the smell was in fact her. The drying bladders, the festering bodies, and the noxious pottage may all have been making valiant contributions to the atmosphere, but the major olfactory presence was the woman herself. She got another good thwack at a fly. It smacked against the rock and dribbled its insides down it in what she clearly regarded, if she could see that far, as a satisfactory manner. Unsteadily, Arthur got to his feet and brushed himself down with a fistful of dried grass. He didn't know what else to do by way of announcing himself. He had half a mind just to wander off again, but felt awkward about leaving a pile of his vomit in front of the entrance to the woman's home. He wondered what to do about it. He started to pluck up more handsful of the scrubby dried grass that was to be found here and there. He was worried, though, that if he ventured nearer to the vomit, he might simply add to it rather than clear it up. Just as he was debating with himself as to what the right course of action was, he began to realise that she was at last saying something to him. I beg your pardon," he called out.
"I said, can I help you?"
she said in a thin, scratchy voice that he could only just hear.
I came to ask your advice," he called back, feeling a bit ridiculous.
She turned to peer at him myopically, then turned back, swiped at a fly, and missed.
"What about?"
she said.
I beg your pardon?" he said. "I said, what about?"
she almost screeched.
Well, said Arthur, just sort of general advice, really. It said in the brochure...
Ha! Brochure!
Spat the old woman. She seemed to be waving her bat more or less at random now. Arthur fished the crumpled-up brochure from his pocket.